Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? Learn more about Wisconsin's cheese-making history at wisconsincheese.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're ringing in the start of our fifth season with dispatches from Portland, Oregon's biggest food festival, Feast Portland. We're bringing you words of wisdom on launching a food business from food blogs.
Most acquaintances from high school have now tried to start a food or fashion blog in some sense and quit very quickly afterwards.
To ice cream shops.
Every city you go to, the salt and straw is completely different than any other city.
We'll bring you insights and anecdotes about the business of the business.
We were like, cool, we're going to do this. We're going to try to raise $75,000 and we'll see what happens. And it was like the most gut-wrenching, miserable month.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show tracing the stories behind your favorite Asian foods. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network, Everbritta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on an aspect of Asian cuisine or culture by having a conversation with the passionate people from the world of Asian food. Today, we're speaking with Paul Chen of Fan Fried Rice and Layla Chen of Maya Bedstai on the topic of rice as a comfort food. It's really cool to see some of the parallels in what they're doing. They're both shop owners that specialize in a rice dish that pays respect to their heritage. For Paul, it's fried rice, and for Layla, it's congee. They're combining tradition and modernity on their respective menus, and they've both set up shop in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. Oh, and one last thing. Although they're not related, they do share the same last name, too. What a coincidence, guys.
Yay.
Welcome to the studio, Paul and Layla.
All right, thank you.
Hi, thank you so much for listening in.
Yeah, so how did you guys bump into each other in the neighborhood, or how did that happen?
Well, I'm always looking for Asian food. And so when fried rice came up, and actually one of my customers came into the shop and told me about it.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, oh my God, I need to go and eat there. And so I went to eat Paul's pork chop at the fried rice, and it was amazing.
So tell me about your path to food, Paul or Layla. Specifically, your decision to focus on one specific rice dish.
All right, let me go first. So,
yeah.
So fried rice is actually very, very big in Taiwan.
So, and that's where your family's from?
Yeah, that's where I'm from too. So fried rice in Taiwan is actually like dumpling or ramen here. So there's from street vendor to like home cooking to fine dining, and then fried rice everywhere. And then people light up with like famous fried rice joint like everyone does here in New York. And even the government, they like threw like competition to try to promote the rice because Taiwan is a very
huge,
big price exporting country.
Oh, okay.
So like rice dishes is like huge in Taiwan, and specific in fried rice is like such a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I first moved to New York and I tried to find the similar fried rice here, and I actually couldn't find anything. I was surprised that fried rice is not even a culture here. So people just go to like Chinese takeout.
Yeah, everyone eats it. Everyone is aware of the dish.
Yeah, but no one really paid attention.
Not in the sense of like it being a quality food or anything like that.
Yeah, that's why I see the
there's a gap
opportunity. Yes.
And what were you doing before this?
Oh. So I moved to New York to advance my career in fashion.
Fashion.
Yes.
Wow.
I went I went to school in UK for fashion. So I worked for a few designers, and then I do all the business expanding in Asia, or like cross globally. Mm-hmm. And then that's where I get all the business idea about how to really expand to a new business.
The business operations aspect.
Yes. And then one day I feel like, I'm ready to do my own stuff.
Yeah.
And then I always joking about, we don't have good fried rice in New York. I want to open one day. And then the two ideas cross each other. I say, okay, that's me right now. I can do fried rice on my own. So that's why.
You made the dream come true.
Yes.
What about you, Layla? What's your path to food?
My path to food has always been kind of a subconscious thing. Of course, I grew up around food and my dad was a cook growing up. So I never really, thought that food would be my career path because it was always like, go to school and work in the office.
Right. That's the goal of...
The American dream, But rice is a great staple, that I never thought, that I would do congee. But now it makes so much sense in my life because it's come full circle in that way. I love what I'm doing now.
That's excellent. And you weren't in food before either then?
No, I was definitely working in an office.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I spent the last, all my career life in working, shuffling papers. And I was also kind of in fashion, I was at Adidas for like 2.5 years in their fashion group, but business related operations and things like that. So it just came into my path. Like I needed to do something different after having a child. And that was when it kind of pushed me to find, what I really love rather than just like what the ideal is, what your career is supposed to be.
Oh, that's so meaningful. Yeah. Having your daughter kind of push you to like rethink what is the most meaningful aspect.
Right. Of your life you have to be like the best role model.
Oh,
like that's what I was, had in mind. I was like, I need to inspire my daughter rather than do what I was doing because I wasn't happy.
You want her to see your passion, your joy every day
and come to work like wanting to do want to do. Yes.
And so were you also like Paul, where you saw a gap in the market for congee or like quality congee or the way you make it? How did you decide on the congee item?
The congee item was definitely a coincidence, after me following Scratch Bread, Matthew Tilden. I've always been a fan of his food and I, stood at his window and he's been a great inspiration for me in terms of like having this like amazing comfort food.
He's a bedside fixture.
Yes, he's a bedside fixture and people stood in line for his food as I did. Uh-huh. And I reached out to him. I said, hey, what are you doing? Why aren't you doing your store anymore in your Chris? I miss it. And, we had some conversations and he was like, you know what? Congee is like grits. I was like, no, it's not. So, with some, a lot of conversations and convincing, I love congee, I just didn't know if other people would love it, honestly. And it made sense. It makes perfect sense now, but make that decision to do congee as my main base at a small shop where I am in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, where Asians probably like 5%. It was a big move for me. I don't know if I was filling a gap, but I was definitely just chasing a dream.
And you took over the Bed-Stuy provision space.
Yes, it was an existing space with an existing menu. I wanted some training wheels, to just kind of see what it's like to be in the food industry. I had no real prior experience other than just like loving to cook and hearing my dad, like, you know, and his mm-hmm. inspirations growing up. It was second nature to me, but it was never like, oh, I'm going to, you know, cook or run a restaurant or crepe. So in that sense, yeah, it was definitely unexpected.
Yeah, and Paul, did you see other interpretations of, like, fried rice around the neighborhood and where you are? Or you're kind of, like, the first in that block?
I think we're pretty unique.
Yeah.
Even in the whole New York City.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't think anyone, like, really do fried rice as
like
a,
you guys
like
do.
A center, like, piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what's your relationship with fried rice and congee growing up? Did you guys eat it at home? Well, Paul, it sounds like there were so many amazing fried rice joints around Taiwan. Do you eat it more as like a thing when you go out?
Yes.
Or both, I guess.
Okay, so to begin with, yeah. my true relationship with fried rice is definitely the love of family. Because I always remember when I growing up to visit my grandparents, and then my grandmom always cook us fried pork chop and fried rice. I think that's really deep down in my brain as a seed that like fried rice and pork chop is good memory.
Yeah, it means family.
It means family is good. And then because we only see her pretty much twice a year.
Mm.
So I think that's the whole fried rice to start in my life. And then growing up in Taiwan, and then the key to fried rice, actually you need to go eat outside to get good fried rice, because you need the high, like, BTU, the power to, the walk to make the fried
rice.
Oh,
the temperature.
Yeah, the temperature is the key.
And professional equipment gives
you
that.
Yeah, the commercial scale to make a restaurant standard fried rice.
Ah.
So, like, you can cook at home, do, like, pretty good fried rice, but we actually to go out to eat to chase the wok aroma, or wok-y, that's how we call it.
I like that, wok heat.
Yeah, so that's the key to fried rice.
That's the magic, yes.
Yeah. What about you, Layla? Did you have congee more at home, or was it something you ate out?
It's definitely something that you can make at home. I definitely ate congee more at home than any other place. Of course, I have a little bowl, a dim sum, if I want to. But it's certainly something that, you know, anyone can make. But it takes time, and it takes, like, just, like, love, you know, to put into it. And it's just like making a tomato sauce. You just have to kind of, like, wait the whole day, you know. And then you get this, like, big bountiful of, you know, pot of congee that you can have for the rest of the week, really. But yeah, to me, definitely it's a comfort food. I had it when I was sick. I have it when it was just like, oh yeah, you know, even leftover turkey for Thanksgiving.
Yes,
it's beautiful.
I love
put
that
the
version.
Whole carcass in congee and just like boil it for hours, and you know, and then you put whatever toppings you want on it. So it's something that I, you know, having even like the duck eggs and the preserved duck eggs, like, was like a craving. So I would often make it at home just so I can eat the duck egg. So yeah, it's very comfort food for me.
Yeah.
It gives me nostalgia, like the being like in my mom's house, like
I see
having
yeah.
her make it.
For both of what you guys are cooking, to me it sounds so versatile. Like you can really make it your own, different versions, whatever
yes.
Ingredients you're craving. There's also traditional takes on it, of course. And then also that you can eat it like any time of the day.
Yes.
It's so friendly. And so how did you guys come up with the specific variations on your menu? Could you talk a little bit about what your menu looks like, what's kind of traditional, and what you've put a spin on?
Okay, so for us, so actually very, to start with, we try to really introduce this Taiwanese style fried rice to New York. So that's why we try to begin, we try to keep a very traditional styles, but also we feel like, oh, this is the best style, and then we're in New York and everyone's so open to new things. So that's why we review all the ingredients, how we can be localized as well. So to our menu, you can see pretty much 60% they are Taiwanese, very pretty much traditional, mm-hmm. authentic flavors. Another 40% we use the traditional wok skills, mm-hmm. but we use local ingredients like pastrami, chorizo, or like the
very Euro New York of you.
Meats. Yeah, so we tried and then combine with some Western and Eastern spices. So mm-hmm. we create our own version of fried rice, which is very New York or very fan fried rice.
That's really great. What are some of the traditional examples that you, more traditional examples?
Okay, so like popcorn chicken, we serve it as 100% as tradition as in Taiwan.
Yeah.
Because that's the dish we don't want to mess up, and then we don't even dare to create our own version. Because popcorn chicken is like the god of street food in Taiwan.
The god of street food, yes. I love that.
So the pork chop fried rice, the way we do the pork chop and fried rice actually very true to the way we do in Taiwan, but mm-hmm. we use arugula to replace the pickled mustard green.
I see. A localized version.
Localized also, yeah. We feel like it's more fun. Mm-hmm. And then when people see it, it's something they are familiar with rather than, because in Best Style, we actually have a mixed clientele. So mm-hmm. not everyone is familiar with mustard green. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to scare.
Yeah, a little bit familiar, a little bit new.
Yes.
I see. Cool mixture.
Yeah, so for me, I think exactly, you know, in that sense of familiarity is very important, you know, thinking about your clientele, your community, like the neighborhood you're in, the kind of customers that you want to come in and the kind of customers you want to attract. So, you know, I do definitely very conscious about what I put on the menu in terms of what's traditionally accepted and then what's new and modern and, you know, quote-unquote hipster, you know, what's on trend. So today there's like such a modern diet, you know, everybody has, there's kind of restrictions. And so I definitely keep that in mind. So for me, the traditions I do keep definitely is the preserved duck egg, 1,000-year-old eggs. It's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's like the perfect congee topping that you'll ever need. In addition to that, you know, then we have, you know, something as simple as like salads that are like a broccoli raw, you know, with garlic and lime juice. And then we have pork that's like stewed. And what we do try to do is incorporate like the base, you know, our base is ginger and garlic, which is very Asian, and then a little hint of spice, which we put jalapeno. And so with that base, we use that in our chicken, we use that in our pork, we use that in our oxtail, our mapo tofu. And with that base, then we then add like, you know, other seasonings, like if you want, may like oyster sauce or Shaoxing wine, soy sauce, you know, rice vinegar, you know, all these other elements that kind of bring up the flavors of each individual dish. So it's, you know, in traditional wise, like, you know, there are only a few things I have kept because even our congee is very modern twist on it. And it's very trend in that sense of what our diet is and what modern, you know, society is. You know, we're very kind of conscious of what we eat. And even in Chinese culture, we're now eating rice with millet or with brown rice now, not just traditional white rice.
It's a global trend.
Yes, global trend. Even my mom is doing that. I'm like, why? Are you eating white rice anymore? So for me to update it in a sense, the congee is now, our congee is with brown rice. It has quinoa, it has white rice. And on top of that, we also cook it with shiitake mushrooms. We have dates in it, you know, we have ginger in it. So all these little aromas kind of bring out and like kind of lift the flavors of what a traditional white rice congee is.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite thing on your menu right now?
For me, the chicken shiitake has been kind of on my mind. You know, I love everything. I wouldn't serve anything that I wouldn't personally eat or love. Or I would, you know, make sure that it is at that quality. But the chicken is, like, on my mind. When I eat it, I'm like, ooh, this is good. So, yeah.
Good job.
Right, I've had my own sugars.
What about you, Paul?
It's definitely the pork chop fried rice.
Uh-huh. Yes. The classic.
The classic one is, like, the king. And then when you have this like very big piece of deep fried pork chop. But fried rice with arugula, that's like
the perfect pairing.
Like right? I agree. In your mouth.
Yeah, and you do seasonal specials.
Yeah,
too.
We do seasonal special, okay, and right now we're doing spicy mango shrimp and basil chicken. So these are actually two new flavors, I would say, in fried rice world. So we actually took, so like the way we, when we create new menus or new dishes, we always look into the traditional dishes and then try whatever we like, and then we take some elements from it and then recreate to our own version. And then spicy mango shrimp is actually a big fan of Mexican food, and then
I see.
I love those spicy mango, like on street vendors.
Yeah, okay.
And then I always, when I see a like little stall, like I would go for those like ladies say get one of those. I love it so much. She's like, oh, how could I convert transfer this to my favorite things and to another things? So I said, all right. I said, we just try different seasoning, and then came out this pretty spicy mango. And so I suppose spicy from. Spiciness from this, like the spicy powders, and sweetness from the mango combined together, and you have this umami from the shrimp. So it actually works really well.
That's really cool. You're capturing a, like a very specific New York moment there too.
Yes.
And could you walk us through how you guys make your fried rice and congee?
I could start first. You know, we are quote unquote fast casual. So, you know, a normal pot of congee would probably take like, you know, 2 to 3 hours in slow simmer. But we do use a pressure cooker to speed up the process to keep up with the demand of the daily.
Makes sense.
And so that's what we use to cook our congee. And, you know, pretty much we have a recipe down to the perfect ratio of grains versus water and spices and, and things like that. And we really just close the lid and
let it simmer.
Let it go. It takes about an hour. Yeah. And
And then afterwards, put the toppings on top.
Yes. And, of course, we let it sit for a little while just to kind of absorb all the liquids. And then we use that as our base, our rice base. Yes.
And what's the wok heat power like at Fan Fried Rice?
Oh, it's pretty hard.
Okay.
You don't want to be there during the summer.
Or on a day like today. Oh, so, my God.
Yeah.
90s?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We pretty much, like the way you make congee, it's always about how do you cook rice. You have to get the right person to cook the texture you want. And then if we mess up, and then we have to redo it again. That's the whole key. Once we have good rice, actually everything's ready to go. And then to cook good fried rice, actually to us, we don't really think it's cook fried rice. It's actually really like assembling. So you have to pre-cook or prepare everything separately once you're ready. And then you just pretty much throw everything in orders. And then you use this high heat kind of to melt them together.
The flavors.
And to create this aroma. And then once it, so like we cook our fried rice, every dish is only takes less than 2 minutes.
Wow. So the actual cooking part, or the
on the wok,
part, as
the heat of the wok is crazy.
Yeah. And so do you steam your rice first?
We use rice cookers.
A rice cooker. Yes, rice cooker. And where do you get your rice from? Is it from Taiwan?
Okay, that's secret, but I'm happy to share my secret about how to make a good fried rice in New York or in the States. So, okay, long story short, in Taiwan, we use this called Taiwan number 9 rice. So it's actually kind of a hybrid between Chinese rice and Japanese rice. So it's very new, very unique and authentic in Taiwan. And then people love to eat those rice number 9. But here, it's impossible to get rice to import to New York State, because like California, we have our own rice farmers. So that's why when before I opened the restaurant, and I have tried different rice, and then we actually finally blend different rices. We use different type of rice. We take some from Chinese rice, some Japanese rice, different brand, and we try, and then finally we reach this level of different rice, and then use rice cooker, and then we try different level of the water, and then put all these things
different
together.
Different rice cookers, everything,
exactly, yes.
Like a science experiment.
Yes. I was really struggling with that. And I fight with my chef all the time because they say, oh, this is too hot. And like everyone has different preference.
Yeah. And now you found the perfect formula.
Yes, correct.
That's awesome.
Pretty happy.
What are some tips and tricks you can share with our listeners if they want to make good fried rice or congee at home?
So, you know, for congee, I think, you know, time is, you know, your essence of, you know, like any food, time and love that you, you know, put into it. I would say, you know, congee is very forgivable. You know, if you have too much water, just boil it for longer.
Yeah, okay.
If you have too much rice, add a little more water. And, you know, but you have to check on it.
Yeah.
Just check on it, stir it a bit. You have to put like a lid over it, but then not fully cover it, you know.
You want to hear it.
You kind of want to be close to it, you know, okay. and keep an eye on it. I think, you know, love creates great food, and that's really the bottom line. Mm-hmm. You have to be present to what you're making. It's super easy, and once you make it one time, then you have your own preference of what the way that you want it. You know, maybe you want it more soupy today, maybe you want it more thick. And so that's something that you can play with, but be aware of, you know, how much you're putting in it and taking notes. Food is so fun and forgivable and great that way, you know, and so have fun with it, really. Again, Thanksgiving's coming up, you know, save that turkey carcass.
Yes.
It's going to be so good. Just use that.
Okay, for fried rice, so there's a little tip to help you to cook it. Good rice for fried rice. Mm-hmm. So when you cook rice, try to use less water.
Oh,
and then you put maybe 1 or 2 spoons oil mm-hmm. in the rice when you cook, mm-hmm. in the rice cooker. So when they will come out pretty nice and like separate, like granny.
Oh, so like all the separate granules. I noticed that at your shop. Yes. Like each grain really stood out on
that's
its own.
Like you put a little bit of oil before, and then before you really put your rice in the pan when you try to do it, try to separate the rice mm-hmm. before you put it in the pan or wok.
Yeah, and you want your wok or skillet or pan to be as hot as possible. Is that?
That's for commercial mm-hmm. use. If you cooking at home, just grab a nonstick pan.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key.
I see. Yes. Okay, making it easy for us.
Yes, I use nonstick. I have no shame to use that at home.
That's great. All right, we'll take a really quick break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin has storied cheese history that begins with Swiss, German, and Italian settlers in the 1800s and continues today with nonstop innovation and award-winning artisanship. Wisconsin was the first state to establish cheese grade standards and the first to require that every cheese plant be overseen by a licensed cheesemaker. It is the only place outside of Europe where one can pursue an elite master cheesemaker certification. All of this helps Wisconsin cheese win more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country. Take, for example, Decatur Swiss Cheese Co-op, who have made cheese since the 1940s. Steve Stettler is a Wisconsin master cheesemaker who developed several new cheeses for the co-op, including a European-style Havarti, a Swiss lace cheese called Stettler Swiss, and a Colby Swiss marbled cheese. His cheeses have won awards at the Wisconsin State Fair and the World Championship Cheese Contest. To learn more about Wisconsin's award-winning cheesemakers, visit wisconsincheese.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Jenna Liut, and I'm the host of Eating Matters here on HRN. Join me as I talk to food systems experts about the issues that shape our experiences of buying, cooking, and eating food. You can find Eating Matters wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. So how did you guys decide to open up your shops in Bed-Stuy?
Well, I live in Bed-Stuy for the past 6 years now. And when I was looking for a shop, I definitely only looked in Bed-Stuy. I wanted to, you know, kind of build my own community up. It's where I live, where I shop, where I play, where mm-hmm. I drink. Like, it's just really a comfortable kind of like welcoming space for me, that mm-hmm. which I've made my home.
Yeah,
you know, literally. So, yeah. My sister's been in Best Buy for like 20 years.
Wow. Have you guys seen the neighborhood change?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's been amazing. And it's also been like super organic in a way that, like, I feel like people really respect the neighborhood in a sense that, you know, they don't try to intrude or try to... I mean, of course, it's gentrification and all that, but it's also very, like, aware. You know, people are aware of things and try to offer things that are kind of... culturally acceptable, international. And I think the neighborhood itself, like, you know, really kind of welcomes that. As long as you're coming through, you know, with genuine intentions. Best Buy is really an amazing neighborhood, very respectable, respectful, and I love living here. People are just real.
That's great.
Yeah.
How did you decide on Best Buy, Paul?
So my story is not romantic at all, so it's really about business. So when we about to choose the location, of course we always look for the primary, like East Village or Midtown, Williamsburg.
Sure.
But to us, it's like very first business we want to try out, so we wasn't really sure. So we try to figure out to find a rather cheaper rent place, and the Best Buy is actually right there. It's like still affordable, and then the clientele there is actually a mix of different crowd, which is perfect for us because we want to bring this new concept from Taiwan, the fried rice culture, to New York, and we want to see the feedback from everyone. It's not like
all
an
types
Asian,
of people.
Yeah, like we have younger generation, have
right.
all residents from Best Buy, we have students from prep schools. It's very international, so that's give us a very good data.
Data sets.
Yes, exactly.
What's your clientele like, Maya? Is that also at Maya? Is that also like very diverse?
Yeah, it's very diverse. You know, of course, it's still, you know, for someone to... I think fried rice is definitely like more easier to like, oh yeah, you know, you heard it many times. But congee is still like very adventurous for many people. We definitely try to sell, you know, that as, you know, as a food that they can kind of accept. But of course, texture is like something that either you love or you don't. And yeah, just in Best Buy, I think our clientele is diverse, but you have to be kind of a food lover, a food adventurer, you know, in order to like want congee. And then once you discover it, like you're diehard, like want all the time.
And like, you have a... locals that are coming in frequently, some regulars now?
You definitely have a lot of regulars, you know, and I love them for what they, you know, how they support us, and I think it's like wonderful. One of the things I do and I keep in mind is price point. You know, we live in Brooklyn for a reason.
Yeah.
I moved to Brooklyn for a reason. You know, that reason still exists. I wanted to continue existing through the gentrification. So, yes, we have students from Pratt as well who travel to Gates and Tompkins.
Cool.
We have some neighborhood people. We have people from other neighborhoods come, who, you know, craving for something different or, you know, just want a food adventure that, you know, they can Instagram or something, you know, that makes them, you know, feel like they're during their New York journey in Brooklyn. In terms of, I really love to... further diversify my menu in terms of attracting more neighborhood people in that sense that, like, you know, I just started oxtail, which is, you know, Caribbean style in that sense.
Yes.
And so I want to pay tribute to my own neighborhood in that way. Yeah.
That sounds great. And I think I saw on your Instagram, one of your customers brought in his own bowl or something.
Yes.
What a friendly gesture.
Yes, it's really awesome. He's not the only one, which which I love, you know, being in... That's why I said Best Buy is so real. Like, people just... We accept whoever and everywhere. Like, anyone who the way that they are and the way that they want to contribute, you know?
Yeah, and
society.
Enjoy the food.
Yes, exactly.
That's really great. And do you listen to the feedback of your community? Are there examples of certain customer requests that you've actually integrated into your menu?
Oh, yes. We actually learned a big lesson from our customer.
Oh, what was that?
All right. So in the beginning, the first like 3 months, we actually didn't have any chicken fried rice dish at all. Because like growing up in Taiwan, chicken is considered
not
like,
as popular.
It's eatable, but it's not considered as a prime meat. Or
not as flavorful as like a beef or a pork.
But here it's like American, we love chicken here. So customer coming, ask chicken fried rice all the time.
All the time. Oh my god.
So one day I was like, all right, I give up. So
then we put your chicken.
Yeah, we put chicken fried rice on the menu, and then it got so popular. And then we started to do like different version of chicken fries. Now we have basil chicken fried rice, sesame oil chicken fried rice, and people just love it. And then I think chicken fries is like the most popular dish or meat on our menu right now.
Yeah.
That's why we learned.
It's a two-way relationship. That's really cool.
Yeah, to begin, I hate it, but now I embrace it and I love it 100%.
Yeah, especially if it's like the number one hot selling item too.
And it tastes good too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have a similar path. You know, I only wanted one meat. I mean, I have a very small shop, so I wanted one meat, one seafood, one vegan vegetable dish. And so I was always kind of fighting to add on more meat because I didn't, you know, have the facility and, you know, I just didn't want to deal with, you know, extra add-ons on my menu given my space. But I have to say I have no regrets adding chicken to my menu.
It's also selling.
It's very good selling, and I love it myself.
Yeah, that's right. The chicken with the shiitake mushrooms.
Yes, it's very good.
And what's it like being in Bed-Stuy? As an Asian restaurant, there's not too many of them, right?
No. Okay. That's true, yes.
Yeah, so you're kind of in a pioneering wave.
Yes. We're pretty proud of what we be making right now. So it's like people know there's a fried rice place on DeKalb, and then
And the news spreads, and it's not like a challenge. It's more like a neighborhood gift.
We're pretty lucky. Like we have an easy start. People actually like fried rice. They come in, they enjoy the food. And I think also because we really pay attention on customer service, we try to remember like all our regulars' names. So they come in, they will hang out, they share their story. When they travel, they will tell us, oh, you won't see me in 2 weeks, you won't go into this here, there, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
That's so cute.
So sometimes I feel like I'm working a barber, because like, I have to like keep them, like, you know, personal life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
they really like building that relationship with
you. I think that's really important for like Bed-Stuy, like a community.
I see.
Neighborhood.
Yes, I agree. Yes, people love to connect, you know, and there's so many creatives, you know, who are very, very down to earth, and they love to like get inspiration, you know, from somebody who's doing fried rice and congee, which is like unheard of, you know, in a neighborhood like Bed-Stuy, which I think people admired, and like for that bold step, you know, into kind of this foreign land. But I never thought there was so much, you know, appreciation for it. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah, that's really cool. And do you apply anything from your past careers to what you're doing now?
Oh, yes, definitely. So, like, having this fashion background.
Yeah.
So when we're doing, like, runway or preparing any, like, a new collection, it's always perfection is the only answer.
Perfection, right.
So that's also I'm struggling every day in the restaurant. I try to make everything perfect, which is
you're striving for that high standard.
Yeah, but yeah, that's why we strive the high standard. Even we reach say 80%, but we're still 80% good.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely give me the background from fashion, give me the strength, always chase for perfection.
And instilling that to the rest of your team.
Yes.
One of the, you know, I think most, the biggest advantage, I suppose, of being in like a business, coming from a business background is definitely like, unfortunately, the unglamorous parts, which is the business parts, accounting, costing, budgeting, all those things like that I, you know, learned from business school and learning from different establishments through my years of like being in an office. I definitely am thankful to have those things at the forefront of my head.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes business grow, and that's what makes any business survive, you know?
Yeah, you're being realistic about
yes,
it.
Yes, yes. And the natural passion that comes from eating, you know, is like, that's the easy part.
Yeah. Cooking is easy.
Yeah, well, yes and
purchasing no. Purchasing is not fun.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's next for your store? How long have you guys been open now? Again?
I've been at my shop for 2 years,
yeah.
Although the shop's been around for 4 years.
Right.
Next step, I don't know all of it, but I am maybe, you know, quote unquote, again, like growing up in a sense, that I maybe do want to sit down, you know, space someday soon, or maybe not, or I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's in my head. It's something that I feel like would take Kanji to the next level. You know,
really
of
cool.
of being comfort food and also putting in a map that's like, you know what, it's not only fast casual, it could be fine dining, but like, you know, casual dining.
Sit down with drink pairings.
Yes, and proper ceramics and silverware, I think it's an experience.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah, I would love to have that, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Would you have other things on your menu, or again, just like the focus on kanji?
I would definitely, as a main dish, only focus on kanji with different toppings. Of course, like appetizers-wise, that's all fun and play right now.
Yeah.
You know, it could be anything, and that's the things that I would look forward to creating.
Cool.
Yeah,
I hope I get to see that.
Okay, so for us, we are a year and a half old now.
Yeah.
And then, like, when we first launched this project, actually already aiming to open different locations.
You had the vision.
We had the vision. So like, yeah, once we open, then we're still looking for new locations, because we know to introduce a new culture, you actually need a stronger power to really spread out, like in the city, and then people more accessible locations rather than Best Buy. Because right now people do travel like on G Train for like 2 hours from Manhattan to eat fried rice, but we really want to help people get fried rice easier.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always looking for locations in East Village or city, also Williamsburg.
Yeah.
There's something we want to do. We want to do different types of restaurant too. So right now we're doing mainly grab and go online, but also want to do some sit down, like we do wine pairing, because fried rice is excellent to go with wine and hot liquor, like whiskey, even cocktails, because we use a lot of spices in our fried rice.
Yeah,
so actually, you think about that, go well with wine, and then actually elevate the whole experience of eating, especially dining out in New York's actually experience.
Yeah, people really enjoy that experience, like the sit down and the atmosphere. Wow, okay, I look forward to that as well. Okay, before we wrap up the show, I have a round of quick fire questions for you, and it's meant to be fun and fast, so please just share what comes to mind first. And you can answer for kanji or fried rice, but what is the best fried rice or kanji you've had in New York or outside of New York?
Kanji Village, hands down. They do this like super creamy top that, you know, it takes a long time to create.
Yeah, okay.
Fried rice, my dad made the best fried rice, I can't deny that. But you know, of course Fan Fan fried rice is like really 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 good.
Yeah, I have to agree, the Kanji Village is actually pretty good.
Yes.
And then I don't really eat kanji that often, because I pretty much eat rice every day, so but I do appreciate good kanji. But for fried rice, I actually really like a Thai restaurant in East Village called Samtam Third. I'm not sure if I pronounced right, but they do pretty good Thai fried rice, because the spicy flavor they use is different to
the spices that you guys use. Yeah.
So I actually really enjoy going out there.
Yum. Okay, what's the best thing you ate recently? It can be out at your restaurant or something you made at home.
You know what? I love sauce. It's like my thing. So actually, I eat out all the time, but not like this question, you know, is triggering this sauce that I have.
Yeah,
created
what's the sauce?
Recently.
Okay.
It is so unique in the sense that it doesn't taste like what it sounds like, but it's oyster sauce base. It has Valentina hot sauce, and then a little chili sriracha sauce. Not sriracha, but the chili one, garlic chili one.
Okay.
And you just mix it, and it's like phenomenal. It doesn't even, it has this like deep like umaminess.
Ooh.
And it's spicy, and it's got that acid, and I was like, ooh, this is so good. So I might actually put that in my congee, but I was actually eating with a steak that I cooked up.
Oh, so versatile sauce.
Yeah, so I've been playing definitely like with a lot of Asian sauce at home, which I never really did before because I just used it straight. But yeah, that's something that I'm
that's
very
fun.
Excited about.
It sounds like you like to experiment in
I
the
really
kitchen.
Do. Yeah, I think in food, that's my favorite part about working in food.
Yeah, there's no rules there.
Yes.
What's something you had recently, Paul, that was delicious?
Okay, so yeah, I just came back from Sweden.
Wow.
So, and then it's actually kebab pizza is actually very, very big there. So I had my very first kebab pizza there.
Wow, what does that even look like?
So when in like Europe, they call kebab. Here we call euro, like this, the euro gyro meat.
Yeah.
So they put just like kebab with gyro with white sauce and like a pizza pie.
Wow.
So it's actually like, sounds very delicious.
I think Roberta should do this.
I know.
Ooh.
So because we have like kebab, like gyro fried rice on our menu, which is good. So it was always good to see like a different country, they use the same meats, but to do a different format of dishes, which is like really learn a lot of the flavor wise.
Fun. And to see that in Sweden too. I didn't expect that. And besides your own stores, of course, what's a favorite go-to in the Bed-Stuy neighborhood for eating or drinking or even shopping? Any recos for those that want to explore Bed-Stuy?
Oh, yeah, like the pizza place, the Speedy Romeo.
Oh.
Yeah, they're actually from Bed-Stuy or Clinton Hill, you would say.
Okay.
That's pretty much my go-to. Try not to go there too often.
It's a gem you want to just cherish.
You know, it's been a long time, you know, establishment, but Peaches, like, they do it right all the time. Like, we went there when it first opened and on Tompkins, and, you know, we used to do laundry and then go and get beer and then come back. And that, you know, to this day, the fried chicken is on point. Like, I respect that so much. Like, that is a real craft, you know, discipline and workmanship.
Yeah, and also that focus on doing one specific dish really well.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for all the answers and for sharing your stories with us, you guys.
Yeah, thanks, Linda. Really love being here.
All right, that wraps up our show. Thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. As always, we appreciate your support, and it would mean so much if you could leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back in a couple weeks, that's October 16th, with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food. Feast Meets West is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to find out more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio.
Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola El Waley, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.